go again. Now we're starting the Neuroptera. Traditionally, we've talked about this as one big order, the Neuroptera. There's a number of Neuroptera workers now that are starting to split this into several different orders. And your textbook still has it as one big order, so we're going to cover it as one big order. But again, some people have split this into the Megaloptera, which includes the alder flies, the Dobson flies, and the fish flies. And then another order called the Raphidioptera, which includes the snake flies. And then everything else, they kind of put in an order. Well, it could be the Neuroptera. Well, it would be the Neuroptera, but they also, if you include it as one big order, we still recognize these as suborders. The suborder Megaloptera, the suborder Raphidioptera, and then the rest of it that we've been calling the suborder Planipinia. So, but anyway, that's the background with this, is that just be aware that some people, and it may end up becoming more accepted, that this big order, the Neuroptera, is actually broken into several smaller ones, the Megaloptera, the Raphidioptera, and there could either be the Neuroptera sensu stricto, or some people may call it the Planipinia. So this is still, now we're getting still in the holometabolus, so the complete metamorphosis. These may not look that much like beetles, but it is an order fairly closely related to the beetles. In fact, some of the immatures of this Megaloptera part are really hard to tell apart from some of the Ataphaga immatures, the Diticity and Gyrinidae, and some of those immatures look a lot like the immatures of this Megaloptera group. In this order, the whole order, the individuals can be small to large. They tend to be somewhat delicate insects. They're not hardened. The bodies are softer, and so they're rather delicate. They have four delicate membranous wings. The antennae are somewhat filiform, although one group they are capitate or clubbed in a couple of the families we'll talk about at the end. The wings are usually held roof-like over their backs. They call the wing venation primitive with the addition of a number of accessory veins. In general, the hind wings and the front wings are somewhat similar in venation. There's usually many parallel branches and things like that. Front wings and hind wings are similar. Mouth parts are mandibulate, often kind of, especially in the males, might be produced out into these kind of sickle-like mandibles, sharp-pointed long, which we see these a lot in the immatures of these things also. The tarsi are usually five-segmented. Cerci are lacking. These groups don't have cerci. Most of the larvae are what we would call campodiaform, kind of long, slender, parallel-sided, with mandibulate mouth parts. Most of the larvae are predaceous. There's one family that we'll talk about in a little bit that feeds on freshwater sponges. That'd be kind of more parasitic, but. And so, we break this up, again, as your textbook, this is all the Neuroptera, according to how we'll cover it, with several suborders. And the first suborder is the Megaloptera, which we'll talk about two families, the Cyalidae and the Corydalidae. In this suborder, a lot of times the characters for separating the suborders are in the immature forms, and so it doesn't help us much. The larvae of this suborder tend to be aquatic, whereas the larvae of the other suborders are more terrestrial. Again, the spongiflies we'll get to later are a little bit of an exception. But in general, these are have aquatic immatures. The other suborders have terrestrial immatures. Again, the mandibles are the chewing type. This is the ones where it's hard to tell from some of the beetle immatures. These usually pupate in earthen cells. This suborder, they're not in cocoons. We'll see later that they're often in cocoons, but this one they're not. The pupae, and it's not just this suborder, but the pupae in a lot of the Neuroptera are what we call decticus. You know what decticus means?
A decticus.
Make sure I spell it. They have decticus pupae. What it means is the appendages, including the mandibles, are movable.
Oh. Functional mandibles present in pupal stage. Okay.
Yep. Most, when you think of pupae, we often right away picture probably moth pupae. Mm-hmm. And the legs and everything are more or less fused with the body. It can't move its legs, where in some other groups, including this one, the appendages will actually be out away from the body. And mm-hmm. So they can move their appendages and can actually move their mandibles. So,
are they feeding people stage?
No.
Defense?
They're just movable. Yeah, it's more for defense than anything else. So, can even defend themselves with the mandibles, yeah. In this suborder, and it's hard to see from this handout, the next couple is more clear, but all the base of the wings are not the same width. So the front wings and the hind wings are broader at base than the fore wings, kind of reminiscent of the dragonflies, right? So, and like I said, I'll point it out, it's more obvious in the next couple handouts. And in this suborder, the anal area of the wings is somewhat enlarged and kind of folds up when it's at rest. So probably the most diagnostic adult character is that of the anal area of the hind wing, which mm-hmm. folds up fan-like at rest. In this suborder, the ocelli may or may not be present. First family we will look at is the Cyalidae, which are commonly called alder flies. These tend to be somewhat smaller than the Corydalidae that we'll do in just a second. Also, these the wings tend to be dark grayish to blackish throughout. As we'll see in the Corydalidae, they're usually clear or may have some black spots or bands on them, but they're not dark throughout. The Cyalidae, commonly called the alder flies. It's not a large family. There's one genus, Cyalis, and only 24 species in North America. Again, moderate to smaller in size, usually dark in color, with the dark, dusky wings. Here, if you look at them from the front, they hold their wings roof-like, but at a pretty steep angle. Mm-hmm. This is Cyalidae. Whereas in the Corydalidae, they hold it roof-like, but at a much less angle.
They're more, Corydalidae are more, Cyalidae are more acute.
Yep. The ocelli are absent in this family. The fourth tarsal segment is dilated and deeply lobed. So what we mean is that fourth segment so this is the fourth segment and the third one will come out of that from between those lobes. So the fourth tarsal segment is apically dilated and lobed. Larvae are aquatic predators on other insects. The adults will lay the eggs on leaves on various plants above the water. When the eggs hatch, the larvae crawl down the leaf and drop into the water. They think that may be where the common name from this came, is the first eggs that were found on alder trees over a body of water, but I don't think they specified alders. The immatures are predatory and they're down in the water. It just happened to be on an alder tree. These do occur around here. I know we've got records of them from over around Valley City anyway, and so you can get alder flies up here. The larvae prefer muddy bottoms of ponds, lakes, and slow streams. Again, they've been collected around Valley City. Then the next family is one maybe you guys have gotten around here. They do occur around here, but it's the Corydalidae. These are larger in size, usually more than 25 millimeters in length. The great big ones are called Dobson flies. The smaller ones are called fish flies. The males of some of the species have the mandibles really long and skinny. You can see one right there in the middle with a great big long. They look kind of ferocious even, or scary, but I don't know if I've ever heard of anybody getting bit by those or being painful. I don't know. I've handled them without much worry. So, but here again, now the wings are roof-like. Oh, I meant to point it out on the last one, but again, the front wings are a little bit narrower at the base than the hind wings.
And that's the same for...
Yeah, same for the Cyalidae. That's a Megaloptera character that just wasn't showing up well. But I did want to point that out. And it is the same for the Cyalidae. Again, here, there's some that are kind of light grayish colored wings, but most of the time they're kind of more clear. They're not as dark and dusky in the as the Cyalids, and some you can see have black spots on them. Here, the ocelli are present. And here, the fourth tarsal segment is cylindrical. It's not dilated and lobed like in the last family. So the fourth tarsal segment is cylindrical. Again, adult males have the long mandibles. The immatures are often collected and used for fish bait. They're kind of great big huge, again, kind of scary looking things. You know what the helgramites. Probably a good Scrabble word or hangman word. A lot of people wouldn't know what a helgramite is. The larvae prefer faster moving areas of the stream. The Corydalids were in slower areas, the Cyalids were in slower areas, but these are usually in faster areas, more well oxygenated areas. We have caught these in the Buffalo River there, over there by that racetrack, the helgramites and that. So these do occur around here. The adults do too. A lot of times the adults will come to lights. You can catch them oftentimes at lights. So, okay, now let's go to the next suborder. Oh, you got another handout on Corydalids. He provided two.
This one has...
That has pictures of the helgramites.
Yeah.
Now, the next one that we'll talk about is the Raphidioptera.
Snake flies.
There's a couple families. One of them's, the Inocelidae. Is out in California and British Columbia that we don't have a handout, we don't talk about it. But the one family I do talk about is this Raphidiidae. The suborder Raphidioptera, these are the snake flies. Some authors lump these together with the Megaloptera, but they're kind of different looking. Here, notice that the prothorax is quite elongate.
Yeah.
Okay, very long prothorax. And notice that the first pair of legs come off at the posterior part of the prothorax. Mm-hmm. You can see it here from the lateral view also. Long prothorax with the front legs coming off near the posterior part of it. They're called snake flies because they can raise that prothorax up in the air and its head will bend. It almost looks like a snake ready to strike. Also notice that the front legs are not raptorial. They're just like the other legs. Yeah. The larvae and the adults are both predatory, but they usually are only catching fairly small and weak insects. The larvae have relatively small mandibles. Again, the pupae are in this suborder are still naked, no cocoon. They are Decticus still. And again, the only family in this group is the Raphidiidae. They're mostly western. They may come into the western part of North Dakota. Again, larvae are often found on or under bark, feeding on soft, immature insects. An interesting group. Now we move into more or less.
Oh, yep. Raptorial arms. Okay.
Yep. Now it's what is the real Neuroptera, sensu stricto. Again, we often call this the suborder Planipinia. And the Planipinia we're going to divide into two smaller groups. Well, let's see, Planipinia first, the whole Planipinia. So this is everything from here on out. The adults lack ocelli. Now the front and hind wings are more or less similar width at base. They don't have that enlarged anal area that folds up at rest. Larvae are predators with usually relatively long sickle-like mandibles. They're kind of suctorial. They have grooves built into those long mandibles that can suck up juices with. The larvae have what we call a blind digestive system, blindly ending midgut, which is also found, interestingly, in some of the Hymenoptera. But what it is their digestive system doesn't connect up from the mouth to the anus in the immature form. And so, as an immature, it doesn't discharge solid wastes. They just build up and are stored in the body. And the digestive system then completes itself during the pupal stage. And so when these things molt from the pupa to the adult, that's when it first discharges solid wastes. So the larvae have a blindly ending midgut, also found in some Hymenoptera. The alimentary canal becomes complete during pupation. The larval fecal material is voided shortly after adult emergence. So
feel like I've heard that some butterflies do something similar.
It could be. I don't know for sure. Jerry would know that for sure. Like I said, I know these, and there are some cases of this in the Hymenoptera too. But this suborder, now they pupate in a cocoon. So they spin a silken cocoon. The silk is usually produced by the Malpighian tubules, which is
Malpighian. Okay.
Malpighian tubules, and the silk then comes out from out the anus. Again, these are all terrestrial families except for the larvae of the Siceridae, the spongilla flies. Now, we'll split this into two groups. This first one is the superfamily Hemerobioidea. See written at the top here. So the Hemerobioidea. And in these, the antennae are not clubbed. Antennae are filiform, manilliform, or pectinate. But antennae not clubbed. That's for the Hemerobioidea. As we'll see, the last couple families we'll talk about have clubbed antennae. It's a different superfamily. And the first family in the Hemerobioidea we'll talk about is the Mantispidae. Have you guys caught any mantispids?
I haven't caught anything that looks like a mantis in either Mantidae or Mantispidae.
They occur around here. We have mantispids and several different species even. Now you notice, similarly to the snake flies, the pronotum is still long. But now the front legs come out of the anterior part of the pronotum.
And they're raptorial. That's why you told us to focus on that.
Yeah, that's what I was preparing you for. That they... Well, you can tell snake flies from mantispids. Of course, these look like a lot like praying mantids. It's a nice, clear example of convergent evolution. Two fairly distantly related groups that have evolved a similar body pattern and life pattern because of similar habits. True praying mantids have the leathery tegmina type front wings. These are all membranous. So very similar in appearance to praying mantids. Good example of convergent evolution. Two widely separated groups have converged upon analogous body forms because of similar adaptations and behavior. Again, prothorax is elongate like the snake flies, but front legs are raptorial and arise at the anterior. These, the adults, are predatory. Of course, you would think so with the raptorial front legs. Have any idea what the immatures do? He's reading it real quick. They are parasites on spider eggs.
Huh. So Spidae larvae are parasites for spider eggs.
Mantispids, yep. They have, again, they undergo this kind of hypermetamorphosis we talked about last time. Remember that? The first instars are more mobile. Let's go and hunt, and they find a spider egg case. Once they found the egg case, they don't really have any need to be more mobile, and so now they become more sedentary. Actually, the first instars are kind of more campidiform. The later ones are more scarabeiform. These often will come to lights. You can collect them at lights sometimes. There are some that mimic wasps. There's some of these adults that the coloration on them look like a big vespid wasp. They lay their eggs on pedestals, which will, I think later on there's another things like the Chrysopody. We'll see, we'll have some pictures of eggs on pedestals I can point out. Mm-hmm. Overwinter as eggs, in spring the larvae seek out egg cases of spiders, usually just one larva per spider egg case. Female spiders look over their egg cases, but they usually don't show any hostility towards the larvae of these things for some reason. So anyway, it's a neat group, and they are around here, so. Now, this one's next family is probably ones that you have collected around here, the brown lacewings. I should caution you, well, brown lacewings, actually a family that looks a lot like these is the spongiflies. We'll get to in a minute, but they're pretty rare. You won't run across those. So what you're possibly would confuse in this group is the brown lacewings with the green lacewings. And you think, well, these are brown and they're green, so that shouldn't be too much trouble. But these usually are brown. But green lacewings, there are some brown ones. So it's not 100%. So usually if you find green ones, they're probably the green lacewings. If you've got brown ones, you may have to go to some other characters and make sure you can separate them. But anyway, the Hemerobeidae, these are the brown wings. Again, resemble Chrysopody, but they are brown in color instead of green. And they're usually smaller than the green lacewings. These, the radial sector has anywhere from 2 to 4 branches. And what they're getting at is this radial sector, which I'm never quite sure which one it is, but it's kind of going out here, but then it comes out here and you can see the R1, R2, and R3. So there'll be several branches of this R vein when you get out towards the end. Again, R1, R2, and R3 are the, and R4 plus 5. These are all branches of the radial sector. Also, and again, I've drawn this on this overhead so many times, it's getting worn out, so you can't see it on here, but you should still see it on yours. But some of these cross veins along the costal margin divide and are Y-shaped. You see some that are Y-shaped?
Yep.
See, it's not hardly showing up here. But that's something to look forward to. Some of these other families will, you can look at those costal cross veins and they're not split, not Y-shaped, they're just straight.
It's like green lacewings, that's one of the things.
Yeah. Also this, and I may have drawn it, one thing to kind of look at is also the SC vein. You see it, I'm drawing it in blues coming around out here. And then that first R vein comes out here, and at least they come pretty close to fusing out here. I'm not sure if they actually do fuse. But the next couple families, one of them they do fuse and one of them they don't. But they come kind of close out there. But anyway, the R sector, RS vein has anywhere from 2 to 4 branches. And along that costal margin, you should see some of those Y-shaped cross veins. Here the eggs are not laid on a pedestal, so no pedestal. The immatures are predatory, feed on aphids and other small insects. Oftentimes the wings look kind of hairy. The wings are often somewhat hairy. I know I caught a number of these on our field trip, so there's a good chance you guys have some of those. Now, the green lacewings is the family Chrysopody. Again, there's a tendency for these to be a little larger than the brown lacewings. Many of them are green in color, but there are some that are kind of yellowish to brownish in color. These tend to be more common than the brown lacewings. G- Again, most species are greenish, but not all. The radial sector is more unbranched. You don't have that as many R veins, or they're more posterior. The SC and the R1 are not fused. So you can see, and my pin's too thick to draw it on there, but you can see the SC vein going almost all the way out to the tip, and right below it is that first R vein also going out to the tip, so they don't come together distally. Also notice, as I said, now these costal cross veins are straight, they're not Y-shaped. And the wings are usually not hairy in this group. The immatures are called aphid lions. They often cover their backs with debris. So you don't see this nice, like those nice pictures of the immatures. It'll look like a massive debris and detritus crawling around. Again, the eggs are laid in stalks. This is where you had a good picture of the lower right-hand corner. You can see the eggs up on stalks.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between a stalk and a pedicel?
Same thing. Okay. Any idea why they lay their eggs on stalks like that?
Mimicry, calcium core, no.
Helps avoid cannibalism. The immatures, if they one hatches out, it'll crawl down to the leaf or fall down to the leaf, and then it can't eat the rest of the eggs.
So if given the chance, they'll eat the other eggs.
Yep. So eggs are laid on stalks or pedicels to prevent cannibalism when they hatch. In life, a lot of these green lacewings have bright golden colored eyes. It's kind of an important predatory family. Some of these are used for biocontrol in various agricultural situations. The next one is one we don't require anymore, the Barothidae. They kind of have these little scale-like hairs along the veins. Some species have this indentation in the wing that makes them a little bit more distinctive. But they're widely distributed, but they're pretty rare. I don't know if I've seen any caught up here or not. I think we have one in a vial someplace that you can look at in that, but we don't require the Barothidae anymore. One that we still do talk about is the Cerceridae, which is kind of an interesting group. These are the immatures feed on freshwater sponges, which we have freshwater sponges in North Dakota, and so we do have Cerceridae up here. These are commonly called the spongiflies. There's only two genera and six species in North America. Again, we have some adults in alcohol vials, or should anyway, but they have been collected in North Dakota. The larvae feed on freshwater sponges. Now here, the SC and the R1 do become fused. Let's see if we can see it on here. You can see the SC vein, I believe it's, and then the R1 comes in and they join with each other before they get out to the apex of the wing. So the SC and the R1 fuse together before they get to the apex. Also notice the costal cross veins are all simple again, not Y-shaped. In the adults, they kind of look like small, tiny brown lace wings. That's what you would confuse them with, is the
brown.
Yeah. Okay. Now we have the last two families. This is now the superfamily Myrmeliontoidea. Remember the Hemerobioidea? We said the antennae were not clubbed. These last two families have clubbed antennae. So these kind of resemble dragonflies and damselflies. If you see them flying around, it might, they're not strong flyers, so it, when you saw it flying around, it probably make you think more of a damselfly than a dragonfly, but they kind of have that appearance of a damselfly or dragonfly. Yes, I got actually have moved it towards later, but yeah, they, that one's not a required family either.
I'm looking at the family name and I'm immediately thinking, well, I know it says antlion on it, but it's, it looks similar to ant in general, so.
What's Myrmeli- that? Myrmeliontidae?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what the ant one was.
Oh, Myrmecophilus. Yeah, sometimes is. Is ant loving. A myrmophile is an ant lover.
Mm.
But this is more, not myrmo, myr, this would be more myrmophagus. yeah, this one, the immatures are called ant lions. And it's because they do form these conical pits in the soil. You can see that there kind of towards the center of your handout. And they'll get down at the bottom of the pit and wait for insects, any insect, to fall in to eat. You can see over to the right-hand side is a view right down into the pit with its head down there with its large mandibles ready to grab anything that falls in. What's interesting is, I mean, and a lot of times it's an ant, so that's why they're called ant lions. But what's interesting is a lot of times an ant will fall in here but won't fall all the way to the bottom. And so it'll be sitting up here on the side. The immature will take its head and flip sand up in the air and hit the ant to knock it, and hit the ant with it, and it'll knock the ant to lose its balance and fall all the way down to the pit where it can get it. Going back to the adults, these, the antennae, are relatively short. About the length of the head and the thorax together, or the prothorax. So antennae as long as head and thorax together. They tend to be, the club is more clavate. And then one other thing to look for is out here towards the apex of the wing, there's this cell that it's called the, what's it called? The hypostigmatic cell. Or truss cell. It's labeled HP there, HP there. Mm-hmm. So hypostigmatic cell, or sometimes just called the truss cell. But in this family, it's relatively long and skinny, many times longer than it is wide. Which, why it's important, I mean, these two families here at the end are easy to tell apart if the antennae are present. Again, this one has shorter antennae that are clavate. The next family has quite long antennae that are more capitate. But again, antennae are fragile and they may get them knocked off. And then you can go to this hypostigmatic cell, long, skinny hypostigmatic cell, whereas the Ascalaphidae, the next family, has a much shorter HP cell. So hypostigmatic or truss cell, one behind the point of fusion of the SC and the R1, several times as long as wide. And we already talked about the immatures building the pits, the ant lions. It's usually in fairly soft or silty soil, where I don't know if I've seen these up here very much or not, but a lot of times, like around buildings where there's an overhang, and so the water's not, it runs off into the gutters and other places, and you'll have this soft, silty sand. You'll see all these little pits. It's really kind of interesting to see. So, and then to finish up, well, this is also one, and it's kind of skipping ahead, but there is an immature in this family that's on the pyramids in Egypt that have the really long neck. And so this is, there's this handout that just has some kind of interesting looking things in that, but they kind of can reach up into the crevices and stuff. I don't know why I mentioned it there in my notes, but anyway. The last family. Sorry, I'm going to get this all messed up. Is the Ascalaphidae, or commonly called the owl flies.
And these antennae are more capitate, you said?
What's that?
The antennae are more capitate?
Yep. Much longer antennae. I mean, it's noticeably longer. Almost the length of the whole body. And now the club is more capitate, not clavitate. Just more of an abrupt club. And then that HP cell or truss cell is only two or three times longer than it is wide. Not near as long. These appear similar to the mammalianids, but the antennae are much longer. The larvae are also similar in appearance, but they don't build those conical pits. They're more crawling around on the vegetation where they're predatory. So, again, I don't know if I've caught Ascalaphids around here, but I have caught them in the southern United States, so. And so, that finishes up the Neuroptera. Again, like I said, I had that one up here, showed you some weird examples of, well, they call it Nemopterity, but there are some that have those hind wings just long and skinny,
mm-hmm.
like you see on there, really interesting. And then there's some Neuropterans that have those head very long so they can reach in cracks and crevices. I think you've seen those on, I don't know, there used to be a picture of up there. It was kind of from the Guinness Book of
World
Records or something, but I don't know, or unusual things. And then I did have that handout on the Coneopterygii. I just moved to the end because we don't cover it anymore. And so there finishes up the Neuroptera. And so this would be the ending point for the next exam, which means I would be thinking about it for a week from today, next Tuesday, which I think, I'll need to talk to Ryan, but I think he's leaving the 16th, which is like the end of this week, so I'm going to have to make some special arrangements with him to get through this. But so, I think that'll work. We got the Beatles and the Neuroptera for a week from today.
Face every time.
Let's do that.
Yeah, because Jerry will be starting with the Hymenoptera. You'll have all the Hymenoptera starting in your, well, he's going to start with the Strepsiptera, I believe, because the Strepsiptera are a group that's bounced around all over the place. They're kind of weird. They have only one pair of wings and stuff, and so they've been considered to be related to the beetles at one time. They've been considered to be related to the flies because the flies only have one pair of wings. I think right now the consensus is that they are actually related to the beetles. And so since I've done the beetle and Neuroptera group, I think he's going to talk about Strepsiptera first and then go into the Hymenoptera. And then, as I said before, there'll be the Trichoptera and the Lepidoptera and the Siphonoptera in there, and the Micoptera are all in that kind of Lepidoptera of panorporid orders. And so anyway.